everyone, and welcome to Minute 103 of Season 8 of Movie Around Minute, the Daily Podcast, where we foobar our way through the 1998 Steven Spielberg award-winning film, Saving Private Ryan, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again today is Duncan Shields of Chronologically Speaking. Welcome back to the show, Duncan.
Hello. Happy to be back here.
Yeah. Even though you're going to get a completely silent minute, but I'm not really completely silent, but there's no dialogue. Let's put it that way. But that's okay. Yeah. No dialogue is good too.
No dialogue is okay. That can be fun.
That's right. All right. So minute 103 begins with Miller just walking away from Ryben. And ends with Jackson giving Mellish a shovel that's all in silhouette.
Yeah, this is a really silhouette-y minute here, which I quite like. I like a good scene in silhouette.
That's true.
Yeah. So and he kind of leaves the decision on Edward Burns there. What's his character's name again? Reiner.
Ryben.
What was it?
Ryben.
Ryben. Yeah. So he just goes to move the bodies by himself, and he's like, you do what you're going to do, and I'm going to go. He's going to grab the wrists, I'm going to grab the ankles, and we're going to get the job done. But you stay here and have a little think. It's a little passive-aggressive. It's a bit of a passive-aggressive cherry on top, I think. Maybe.
Turning his back on the guy and going to actually do work. You're jumping ahead. You love jumping ahead.
I'm so sorry. There's a moment of silence that I just keep on trucking. I'm sorry. Okay, yeah, you're right. So we're in silhouette. I love a silhouette.
So we ended things yesterday with Miller finally giving his opinion as to, why he's there and what his true personal mission is in this war. He's there to, do whatever he's being told to do in order to make it one step closer to getting back home, to being back with his family. And, at the same time, he wants to do all that he can to ensure that, he still is, I guess, sane when he eventually makes it back home, that he still has a strong grip on his own humanity.
Yeah.
At that point. And I like the way that they present this character in that exact way. They do a great job of it. And basically, this minute begins with Miller just turning away, and he just like walks away from Ryben, and he walks up the hill a little bit. I mean, we could see that it's towards the end of the day. This is getting closer to dusk. With the whole thing, and so Ryben walks in one direction, and Miller walks in another direction, and we're not really sure where Miller is going at first, but we can see in the distance, where they've buried the bodies of the troopers and Wade, and he just walks up this little hill, but the way that it's shot is just amazing because it gives us. First of all, the music is great with the way that it is, but the cinematography, this minute, as you pointed out before about with the silhouettes and stuff like that, which we'll get to in a second, it's just so beautiful to look at cinematographically, with the way that it moves along. So here we have Ryben in the foreground and Miller in the background, but we see Miller is actually going to do something there. He takes off his helmet, puts his helmet on the little pole that's there, and then he starts walking over towards an area where we see a blanket on the ground and we can see some feet. And then the second half of this minute is done completely in silhouette. So we first see Miller bending over and lifting something up, and you can see after a few seconds that he's lifting up one of the bodies, he's basically taking the bodies of the Germans. You know, that's his plan here to be as humane as he can be. You know, which connects exactly with what he said at the end of yesterday's episode, where he's basically saying, you know, I the more people I kill, the further I feel from home. But if I'm doing something that's a little more humane, that might be helpful to me also. You know, to keep that humanity there.
Yeah, there's a good have you talked about the movie Passchendaele? There's a
I've seen
Canadian
it. I've
movie.
seen
There
it.
was
I've seen it.
a TV show named Due North, Due South. I forget. It was Due North or Due South. It was Paul Gross was the lead in that. He played the Mountie, and was his passion project was making this movie Passchendaele. He stars in it. And
Yes, great World War
there's
II movie,
Passchendaele was
World War
the
I movie.
site of a big battle. You know, I'm no historian. I'm going to get a bunch of this wrong. But there's a moment where he is a flashback where he comes up over a hill, and he sees a German soldier. And this German soldier has got to be maybe 16. And the German soldier doesn't have his rifle raised, and he's like, oh, you know, oh no. It's an American soldier, and I mean a Canadian, you
Canadian.
know, part of an allied soldier. And Paul Gross is like, oh, and like kind of pauses, and then the 16-year-old relaxes like, oh good, you're not gonna shoot me. And he smiles like, whew, you know, close. But then Paul Gross is like, I gotta do this, and shoots him. Like, I can't not shoot this soldier. We're in a war. So he kills this more or less defenseless, you know, kid on the battlefield. And that's one of those scenes from a war that, like, you know, whenever you're in a war, you think you're killing this snarling enemy, but you could just be killing, you know, bakers and school teachers from the other side. And you know, the people at the top you disagree with, but the people you're fighting, you know, maybe they're just like you know. And there was a book I've been reading recently called The Keep. So there's a movie from 1987, I think, one of Michael Mann's early movies, called The Keep. And it's about Nazis that find this centuries year old keep in the middle of a Romanian village that's actually a crypt for
I've
an
got
ancient evil and a demon that gets out and starts killing all the Nazis. So, you know, demons killing Nazis, great movie in my books. But there's two Nazis in the book, or two Germans in the book, and one of them is a guy who was a soldier in World War I. Didn't really care that much for Hitler's rise to power, but he was a decorated officer from World War I, so he's still in the German army, but he detests, you know, the SS and all that. And so, like, and then there's this SS officer and contingent that come into the small village to take care of the problem or whatever. So you've got these kind of like two different kinds of German soldier. One of them's kind of anti, you know, anti what's going on in World War II, and one of them's all the way pro. One of them's completely bought into it. You know, and I'm sort of interested in that kind of dichotomy, because everybody pictures the other side as a unified front, and they're sick of all the infighting on their own side, but they don't realize that the other side also has a bunch of infighting, and they picture you as having a unified front. You know, it's like that with the right versus left, and all sorts of different conflicts where we're all, both sides are arguing amongst themselves about whether or not what they're doing is right. It's really hard to push an entire people towards the brink of war. And so it's something that I think is somewhat captured in Band of Brothers. Not a whole lot, but somewhat. And when we talk about our top five for this week, and
All
talk a little bit more about that.
Right, but I mean, it's interesting. You mentioned the thing about Passchendaele. The way you described it, it sounds very similar also to a way that something is, one of the scenes in Band of Brothers, where you have Richard Winters dreaming that he's running after this kid. He's running ahead of everyone else, and he gets to this. He gets over a hill. He's there all alone, and there's just a young German soldier there. And he waits for a second and doesn't know what he's supposed to do, and then he realizes that it still is the enemy, and he shoots him. So it's very possible that I'm trying to remember when Passchendaele came out. Did that come out in the late 90s? I'm
Yeah.
trying to think whether that came out before Band of Brothers or not. That's the
Passchendaele was 2008.
Ah, okay. 2008. Okay.
Yeah. I don't remember the scene you're describing, though. You're saying in, oh, in Band of Brothers, you're talking about Band of Brothers?
Band of Brothers, yes.
Oh, you know what? It's possible my memory's playing tricks on me. I remember the scene from Passchendaele. I might be misremembering, and I might be thinking about the scene from Band of Brothers. Yeah, but I hope not. But I might be, because what you just described sounds exactly like what I just described. So it's possible I'm getting
I'm
my
aware of
memories mixed up.
that, but who knows? That's okay. Perfectly all right.
Yeah.
The rest of this minute is showing the other men showing up and deciding to lend a hand to Miller as he's dealing with burying these soldiers, and the last one to finally come around is Ryben, who starts walking up the hill to go help everyone else out. He's come to realize that he's in a good place. There's no reason for him to be running away. And I guess you could say he's in good hands
Yeah.
with Miller in the lead here. He's not going to be
Yeah.
doing anything that's going
Yeah.
to possibly endanger him anymore, even though that is what Miller just did, by
Yeah.
making the assault, but still.
I really like how this moment kind of, because he, I think maybe Ryben has a moment of saying, if not here, then where else? Like what's gonna, so I get transferred to a different unit. We're not gonna be doing anything different. Like I'm still gonna be taking machine gun nests under a different sergeant or a different leader, in a different part of France or whatever. Like, so what's the point of me effectively deserting, especially when like he was
Okay.
gonna do it to kind of show Tom Hanks, like, I'll show you I'm gonna leave, and Tom Hanks is like, I'll do the paperwork,
I'm
and so
with
he's
you,
like,
Bill, if that's what you want
oh, okay, well,
to do. You think he's using reverse psychology
anyway,
on him?
I think there's a touch of reverse psychology, a touch of passive aggressiveness, but I also think that he's being completely genuine.
Okay.
Right? Like I think he's being completely, like it's like we were talking before. Like I think he's had revealing what he does for a living in his back pocket this whole time to defuse a situation. Perhaps we could say whether it's subconsciously or consciously, whether it's a manipulative tactic or he just realizes in that moment this could work, but I think he's being real with them. It would have been nice to find out at the end that he was actually an automobile factory executive and it was all a giant lie. But that's not gonna fly. But he's yeah, so he's being real with them. And he's
Yeah,
saying, I will
that
do the
actually would have been funny
paperwork.
if he was like
But
a
I
commercial
think
officer.
he's also playing him a little bit. Like he's also like, if you want to go, there's the door. And like with my blessing, right? Like I'm not gonna say, get out of here, because I think that's what Revan wants, is he wants, Tom Hanks to lose it and say, yeah, well, you'll come crawling back. Leave if that's what you want to do. But instead he's just calmly saying, yeah. Okay, I get where you're coming from. It's this thing where he's saying to Tom Hanks, I don't like where we are, and I don't like what's happening. And Tom Hanks is saying, I also don't like where we are,
And
I
I
also
also
don't
don't
like
like
what's
what's
happening.
happening. That's right.
You
But
know,
they
like we're not on different teams.
that's right. But they both have different perspectives on the same problem. You know, that type of
Yeah.
thing.
Yeah, I think it's a really good scene because of that.
No, I like the way that they do that with between the two of them.
There was a guy, it's someone I wanted to talk about was there was a guy named Franz Mesmer, who was a German, and he was 1734 to 1815. He was a German physician. He was interested in astronomy. He talked about the existence of a process of natural energy transference occurring between all animate and inanimate objects that he called animal magnetism, which we've since kind of taken and used to just mean lust, I guess, or whatever. But he was kind of talking about the force, you know, as Star Wars would have described it. Like there's an inherent ebb and flow of energy between all living and non-living things universe-wide that's all connected to each other. And you can sense it, you can manipulate it, you know, and you can't levitate rocks. But he was saying that there are people that are more naturally disposed to the manipulation of these natural energies. And for then he would say that you can have a person in front of a room that talks and everybody will pay attention to the person. And then somebody else will be in front of a room to talk and nobody's going to care what this person has to say, even though they're delivering the same speech. And more importantly, they've both rehearsed it. They're both off book. They're both being delivered with confidence. They're both being delivered with kindness. But for some reason, one person commands the room, one person doesn't. You call it in Hollywood, you might call it the it factor, you know, or the X factor. There's just something about a person that leaps off the screen, even though in real life, you know, they're fairly attractive, you know. But then you've got the opposite that can happen where there's people that are just absolutely drop dead beautiful and magnetic, but somehow on camera, the camera's like, no, I don't really care about this person. You know, doesn't really, you know, you see them on camera, you're like, yeah, okay, it's an attractive person, I guess, but they're not commanding your attention. And he was really fascinated also with this in terms of military leaders, where you've got two people that went to the same school, two people that are both on the same rank, two people that have risen through the ranks, and one of them, his troops will follow him into a burning house. And the other one, his troops are always on the cusp of mutiny because they hate his guts.
They're gonna throw him in the
But
burning.
they're gonna throw they're gonna throw him in the burning house. But they're effectively the same commander. So what is that magic that that makes one person super effective and one person isn't? You can break it down to the seven highly effective habits of successful people or whatever that you want to do that people have tried to do for, you know, hundreds of years. But this guy was talking about how there's a certain mesmerism. Well, he called it animal magnetism, but
Well, before he did, because he was speaking in
now when
German.
you talk about someone being mesmerized, you're actually talking about Franz Mesmer. His surname has become a verb, and I think that's a pretty interesting thing. There's a, that that's happened to a few people over the course of it. It's like when a brand name becomes, you know, when a Xerox was just the word for a photocopy, you know,
Kleenex, too.
because Xerox were the only photocopiers and stuff. So this
Yeah.
guy Mesmer, his name has been elevated to a literal verb in the English language. When someone's mesmerized, they're talking about the power that this guy was talking about, like a hypnotism that he became known later on as just a hypnotist, but it was more like he was talking about what is that magnetism that makes one person better at leading than others. And we see, I just think we see a really good example of it here with Tom Hanks. You know, he's the kind of person that you would like follow. And it's you know, it's here, but it's in all of his movies. You know, everybody's like, people call him the new Jimmy Stewart, but I think he's you know, the first Tom Hanks or whatever. But I get what people are saying when they say that he's got that Jimmy Stewart-esque kind of quality. He's an everyman, but he's also an everyman that you would follow.
Sure. But you know, he probably didn't call it animal magnetism because he was speaking in German. But yeah. That's
Oh, sure. Yeah, sure. I wonder what the actual, yeah, there's probably definitely
language barrier.
something that's getting lost in the translation there. Definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. And the last 5 seconds of this minute is once again completely in silhouette, showing the men working together, I guess covering up the graves. It's just a great it's a great moment. You know, showing that you know, this little speech by Miller has now brought all these guys together. You know, you know, whatever their arguments were before, whatever they're fighting, it's all gone. Right now, we're back as a fighting unit. You know, we're friends again. That type of thing.
Yeah, and I was, I mean, it doesn't super matter, but I think that they're not exactly a fully functioning team again, but the storm has passed,
Okay.
you know? And but I think you and I might have slightly differing, like I think you think they've finally become a unit in this scene,
No, well,
now,
no, they
now,
returned to be a unit because they were a unit before. You
yeah,
know,
they continue to be
they
a unit,
lost
right?
it, you know, for a few minutes here and there.
Yeah.
All right, do you have anything else you want to say about this minute?
Nope, that's it.
All right, so every Wednesday we have a segment called World War II Wednesday, where my guests will give their top five World War II movies. So I know that this is a very a much larger you know group of movies to choose from, but you know I trust you, Duncan. I know you'll be able to whittle it down from
It's a
top ten.
long, yeah, they've made a
They're
few movies
back.
about this. Ah, gosh, this one thing I can't remember if this was an American production, but I think
It doesn't need
with
to
the
be.
exception
You can.
of one of them, none of them are American productions.
Okay, and that's allowed.
And I want to give honorable mentions, if I can give two honorable mentions, to The Counterfeiters and Downfall.
Okay.
Counterfeiters was, I thought, a really good film. Didn't make it to the top five,
I've
and
seen that. I've
I
seen both of
thought,
them. Yeah.
you've seen it?
Yeah.
And Downfall. It took me a long time because Downfall got memed to heck, you know, to hell and back like this. That speech was everywhere for a while. But then people were like, "No, the movie's actually really good, though." And I was like, "Oh, I don't know if I can watch another movie," but I did eventually, and I was like, ah, you know what, they were right. That was actually a really good movie. Hard watch, but a good movie, like a lot of these. Okay, so number five would be The Pianist. I thought that was pretty great stuff. I saw it again, I guess, about a year and a half ago, and I was like, yeah, it's still really powerful. A lot of moments of it really, really, really stick with me. Number four was one I saw recently called Monsieur Klein from 1976, starring Alain Delon. It's a French movie about an art dealer in Paris who's got the same name as one of the Jews that's scheduled to be rounded up in a horrible moment in Parisian history where they completely complied with the Germans and rounded up all the Jews in Paris and had them shipped out one November morning.
Yeah,
And he's got the same, he's got, what's that?
you'll actually be very happy. You're not the first person to use that on the to put that on your list.
Oh, I'm really happy to hear that because I was new to the movie, but I heard it was kind of a big deal. And I was like, this is great because he's got this, you know, he goes through this process of saying, oh, no, I'm not, you know, I'm not that person, you know, I'm not Jewish, I'm not that person, I'm a good person, you know, like you don't round me up, hopefully you find the right person, but I'm not that person. But over the course of the movie he comes to sort of realize that, like, it doesn't really matter, like we're all people and this is wrong, you know, like. And he's sort of, yeah, he's this sort of guy who's a bit, you know, a bit in and out, a bit up and down. He, you know, anyway, whatever. I'm really glad to hear that other people put it on the list. Number three would be Life is Beautiful, 1997, Roberto Benigni. I think that one blew everybody's mind. And I think, you know, it was a second kick at the can because, oh man, who's the guy that tried to do, there's a
Pinocchio.
movie with it. What was that?
Pinocchio.
No, oh yeah, that didn't work out, unfortunately. But the guy, who's the guy that's huge in France that everybody thinks a comedic genius? Oh boy, Ron Lyvin. Hello, nice lady.
The J
Jay Lewis. Jay
Jerry
Lewis. There
Lewis.
we go. Jay Lewis.
There
Yeah, Jerry Lewis did a movie called "The Day the Clown Died" about a clown that gets sent to a concentration camp, and it's apparently one of the worst movies that's ever been made. And he, after it was finished, he put it in a vault inside his house, and was like, "No one's ever going to see this horrible abomination that got created." Apparently, one person has seen it in the last like 20 years or something, and that person has said, "Yeah, it's all true." It's not just that the subject matter is bad, it's that any good decision that could have been made was not made. And
Right.
it is a boring film. Worse than awful, it's boring and it's just not good. But Life is Beautiful, opposite of that, amazing film. Loved it. Loved it. And what a, who would even dare? Or I'm going to make a hilarious comedy about this subject matter. And he did, and it was very touching. Number two would be Come and See from 1985. That movie changed me as a person. I was not the same after I saw that film. I was in a daze for like a week afterwards. That is apparently the movie that Spielberg showed to the cast and crew of Saving Private Ryan, saying, "I want to make something as effective as this." We won't, but that's the goal.
Do you think they did?
No, I think that there's moments of truth and moments of beauty and moments of grace and moments of poetry and moments that capture war. But again, it opens and closes with the sun shining through an American flag and, tell me I've lived a good life and earn this, like there's moments that are very like, you know what's great? American soldiers. And I'm like, okay, let's just take the foot off the gas just a little, like, so there's, it was the same with, I guess like something like Schindler's List, where like, it's an incredible film. It's an amazing film. It's a Spielberg movie as well, though.
Right.
Like I remember after 9/11, there was like news stories trying to spin it into something big and horrible, but it was big and horrible. Like they'd had like 70 years of not much going on, or 50 years of like, yeah, and not much super duper going on, but planes taking down both of the Twin Towers was like, you could see each news station being, it was the worst attack on American soil in recorded history. Oh, wait, it actually was the worst attack on American soil in recorded history. How do we really amp this? Like, because they're trying to do the news thing of fluffing it and pumping it and making it bigger than it was, but it was for the first time in a long time something actually huge. So how do you sensationalize that? How do you sell that? And so I find that was sort of the similar thing with Schindler's List, where I was like, you're depicting this horrifying, awful thing, but in a Hollywood way,
Okay.
right? So there was this sort of hybrid to it that I was kind of uncomfortable with, that you it was, other like, oh, there was a monologue by a poet named David Hare, and he talks about visiting Israel and visiting that part of the war, and he also talks about going to a concentration camp, and afterwards there was these pieces of art, like a statue of a starving man and a painting of prisoners. And he said the thing that stuck with him the most was all the filing cabinets of all the victims, because the Germans were meticulous record keepers.
Right.
So they actually had a folder on everybody that they had executed at the camp. And the amount of filing cabinets, and that each drawer holds like 600 people, and there's four drawers in each filing cabinet, and there's 500 filing cabinets or whatever, you're like, oh man, like this is a big deal. And then after that, you get to see some paintings and some statues. And he's like, what is a painting of a starving man? What is a statue of a dying person? Like, you can't capture it.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
The facts are awful. A piece of art about it can't come close.
Right.
And so that's that was, you know, one of the issues I had with, you know, Schindler's List and also with Saving Private Ryan. And that's why Come and See really changed me as a person, because I figure that's the first movie I've seen that actually comes close to depicting the horrors of war. And I can see why Spielberg showed it to everybody before production on the movie to say, this is what I'm going for. But I don't think an American Hollywood movie system is even capable of creating something like that.
Probably not.
Okay.
And what's your number one?
Huge, huge aside. Holy moly, that was a huge aside. Number one would be Das Boot from 1981 with Jürgen Prochnow, which depicts the German submarine, the life of German submarine crew and their commander in the ending days, the dying days of World War II, when they are very much losing, but they are still going on mission after mission. And yeah, they're barely holding it together. It's an incredible, incredible film.
All right. Excellent. That is a great list. Thank you very much for that. So
you're welcome.
Duncan, would you like to once again tell people where they can find you?
Just Google, you know, by Duncan Shields, and Google Chronologically Speaking for a good movie by minute rendition of 1982's Tron, and Google Time Bandits Minute, and check out a good deep dive on the classic Terry Gilliam Time Bandits.
All right. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Around Minute. You can find me on Twitter. You can find me on Facebook. You can find me on Instagram. You can find me on my website, moviearoundminute.com. And if you want to send me an email, you can send it to moviearoundminute@moviearound.net. So until tomorrow, earn this.
Earn this. In my solitude, you